It's the movie where Disney deconstructs its own princess myth. No, I'm not talking about Beauty and the Beast. Or Frozen. No, not Wreck-It Ralph. Not Tangled. Or Ralph Wrecks the Internet. Or Pocahontas. Or the live-action Beauty and the Beast. Or Frozen 2. Or Mulan. Or the live-action Mulan. Or the live-action Cinderella. Or Maleficent. Or Maleficent Mistress of Evil. Or, no, definitely not Shrek. That's DreamWorks. No, not Brave, either. Or Princess and the Frog. Or Raya and the Last Dragon. Okay, fine. It's one of the many, many movies where Disney deconstructed its own princess myth. But this is the one with Amy Adams. It's Enchanted, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, my name's Sean Collier. That's the show. I said it, and then Addie sang it, and I'm here with my two favorite Reese's Pieces. It's Camila Adams.
Aw, hi.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Isn't it Ralph Breaks the Internet? And isn't there a scene in the film, or at least in the trailer, where they discuss that it should be Ralph Wrecks the Internet, and then it's like, no, but it's a thing.
I don't know.
That seems right.
Shouldn't it be Ralph Wrecks the Internet?
Yeah, since he is Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, but break the Internet, it's like a thing.
Right, it's just Wreck the Internet kind of sounds better, doesn't it?
You're not wrong.
What did I say? Ralph Wrecks? Yeah, it should be Ralph Wrecks the Internet.
Yeah, I kind of believe both things. Colin was just telling me that there's this huge controversy over whether or not Mary's dress waves or sways in Thunder Road. And I was like, well, I always thought it was waves, but I don't feel strongly about this. And he was like, well, I don't think you're a real Bruce Springsteen fan, because apparently it's a huge controversy.
Wow. Wow.
But then I said, listen, this is me pushing my glasses all the way up. I have a bootleg recording of the first time that song was performed live. And Mary's name is Angelina. And the song is listed as Wings for Wheels. So, like, I feel like there is no firm canon, is what I'm saying.
Berenstain versus Berenstain.
Yeah.
We were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last week, and one of my favorite things is always they have some the real document, but some just a very faithful reproduction of the scrap of paper where rockers wrote down the lyrics to favorite songs.
Nice.
That's so cool.
And sometimes it's pretty fully formed, and sometimes it's like mostly there, but there's a lot of scratching out and like rewriting or changing a word. The Born to Run lyrics are there, which, you know, just I collapse into a puddle, but it is just like a stream of consciousness, dense page of writing, you know, about cars and New Jersey and sadness and love. And you could see, oh, those three words make it. Like, I think he just turns on his Bruce brain and spews things and then later picks from those. Anyway, Bruce Springsteen has very little to do with either Enchanted or E.T. To get back to last week, I think I figured out the secret. I think Camila actually watched Mac and Me. Did you watch Mac and Me?
There's no way Mac and Me would be above 50.
No.
No, my God. I remember when that thing came out and there was a kid in my neighborhood that kind of looked like Mac. And he had a rough summer. He had a rough summer.
No, I appreciate you not listening to the peer pressure from all of us, because that makes me feel better whenever I'm like, hey, Top Gun is bad, just so everyone knows.
No one thinks Top Gun is good, right?
I don't. I mean,
people do.
I've seen it once.
People think it's fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fun for somebody.
Volleyball scene is fun.
That's a very specific
yes, your short obsessions.
84 homoeroticism. Love that too.
Yeah. 84.5 was the final score on E.T. Continuing the Camila tank this on purpose conspiracy theory, that not only leaves Fight Club where it sits as our number one movie in America, but it lands E.T. right below 7. So not only was Fight Club protected.
But I'm a mathematical genius savant of sorts, and I could have foreseen exactly what you guys were going to rank E.T.
Exactly. Ninth place overall between Seven and Aliens. Still very respectable.
Protect Fincher.
Not Mank so much, but the other, the 90s one. You
know? Right, yes.
And thanks again to Addie Twigg for coming on the show.
Always welcome.
I wanted to give a quick shout out to Beth Getches, who was at the time of the auction Arcade's development director. She has moved on to greener pastures. But thank you, Beth, for all that you did for Arcade and for organizing that auction so that we could once again have exciting guests.
Nice.
But this week, we revisit the sunnier pastures of 2007, when you could pretty much just have a nice movie and it would make some money and everyone would be happy and no one would question it. I had not seen Enchanted. Had either of you?
Yeah, I had seen it. I don't remember the circumstances in which I saw it or why, because this doesn't seem like something that I would have got. I definitely didn't go to the theater for it. Maybe it was on cable or something. I was just like, sure, why not?
I saw it in the theater, but I don't think I would have. My friend was managing the Oaks at the time. And she would sometimes have us come for a late night screening of things.
Nice.
The best thing ever, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, was that they had a mystery reel of old trailers.
Ooh.
Taped together. And we watched the mystery reel. And like some of them were backwards. One of them was shifted so you could see the soundtrack. It was amazing.
Lost beauty of, hey, what's this? Put it on the projector.
Right.
Yes.
And I said all of those, and I didn't even, in the intro, all of the other, like, it's a princess, but different, and I didn't even think of The Princess Diaries. Isn't this, like, the same time as The Princess Diaries?
Probably.
Yeah, and Julie Andrews is also involved in it, as she is with the Shrek franchise, so good for her.
Andrews had nothing to do with Enchanted, right?
Or what? She's the narrator.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember. Thinking
this
that.
Our second Julie Andrews movie.
What was
after
our
what?
First?
Ten.
Oh,
ten. Oh, yes. That was a great, great character for her. It was nice to see her in a role like that.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen Enchanted, let's tell you what happens. It could be done with the two words, mostly elf, but we'll probably go a little bit deeper than that with a 60-second recap this week. Camila Adams, to tell you.
I'm not prepared.
Ooh, I panicked. Ooh, you got
I'm
me.
I'm not prepared, which is humiliating because we were supposed to record this Tuesday. And I watched it. I came in hot on Tuesday. And I was like, well, it's fine that I'm not prepared because I just finished watching it. And then we couldn't record because of thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. And here I am two full days later, still unprepared.
All right.
But I'm going to get through it. I'm an improviser. I can do this.
It was only like 46 hours. It wasn't a full 48. You were presumably asleep for some of those. You know, it is, in fact, Robin Hitchcock with what I'm sure will be a flawless 60-second recap. And go.
Amy Adams is Giselle from Andalasia, and it's an animated world where she is part of a prophecy to marry the prince and make Susan Sarandon's evil Nerissa lose her power. And so Nerissa throws her down a well where she goes to the real world, which is not animated. And she meets Patrick Dempsey, who's a single father and kind of a schmuck the way that Patrick Dempsey always is. But then she shows him how to be a princess and they fall in love. And then Nerissa comes through the well. There's a big fight and the prince comes and he's Cyclops. And he's actually very charming. And he falls in love with Idina Menzel because pair your spares and they live happily ever after.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a dragon.
Yeah, that's right.
Timothy Spall is there as a gopher who's kind of in love with Nerissa. You could have cut that and no one would have noticed. It's one of those, you know, Disney princess stories. But
I think I like your version better where she shows Patrick Dempsey how to be a princess.
Yeah.
I guess I mean how to have a naive joy about the world.
Gotcha.
This movie, I have not watched Splash since I was a child, but when I was watching this movie, I was like, I kind of want to watch Splash.
It has very Splash-like tendencies.
I guess it's interesting in that this is a movie that really seeks to deconstruct while doing it very earnestly at the exact same time.
But it fails, in my opinion. I kept thinking about Scream, as I always do. And I
who wouldn't?
Right, exactly. But like, Scream is, to me, the perfect example of being a parody / deconstruction while successfully accomplishing everything that they are sending up. And this movie, I think, can't decide how sincere it wants to be. Mm. Like the scene where she does the happy working song, where she's like, I'm going to have the animals help me. And then the animals are gross New York City animals. That is funny.
It's hilarious.
I wish this movie had committed to that.
Right.
And they don't. Like, then they very quickly, like, pivot to being like, and it's a live action, normal Disney princess movie.
Yeah, you're right. It does. Yeah, I know. There's something that's kind of like I was feeling some sort of like a disconnect a little bit. Like, I enjoyed it. I was entertained by it. And that the rat and cockroach which is cleaning up, that was the funniest thing to me.
And it's great. And also, like, I was surprised how well animated I thought that was.
Right. And also, like, the physical, quote, comedy from the chipmunk. Like, was he trying to, like, that shit was hilarious. There were at least three laugh out loud moments for me. And you're right, like, it doesn't really stick to that. Like, had they stuck to that kind of thing, it probably would have been much more entertaining to me. Not to say that I was bored, but I did kind of tune out a little bit towards the end.
Oh, it definitely moves. It's not like, ugh, you know, you can stare at it. But the more it plays it straight, the less interesting it is. Mm-hmm. You know, for a thing that clearly knows that this story needs to be taken apart a little bit, it kind of just unlocks that door and then goes, we're not going to walk through that door yet.
Right.
And I'm not ready.
And I wish there had been much more like a live action Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
I do think her voice work is great. I hate Susan Sarandon, like, as a human being. She's
what has she done? Like, you, like, I mean, I need to go to Robin apparently to find out, like, the problematic.
Ralph Nader in 2004.
And what's her name? Jill Stein when Trump got elected.
Yeah, she's indirectly responsible for millions of human deaths.
Oh, damn it.
So I'm dead serious.
Damn it.
So
all the hell.
She's a great actress.
I think you may be overstating the influence of Susan Sarandon on the electorate. I don't know how many minds she changed.
All right. Yeah. Look at those vote margins, buddy.
Well, I will weigh that against, really, the triumvirate for me is Rocky Horror, Bull Durham, and Dead Man Walking. So up until then.
Where's Thelma and Louise on that list? I haven't seen Thelma and Louise.
I have seen Thelma and Louise. Thelma and Louise is, yeah, and it's great. I wouldn't match it with the three I just mentioned, but it's
Gina
great.
Davis is better.
Yeah, I think of that as a Gina Davis and like 13-year-old Brad Pitt movie. All of these tangents aside, let me tell you about Enchanted, which came out November the 21st, 2007. It was the 37th number one movie of that year. Won its first weekend with $34.4 million among five debuts that weekend. It debuted alongside This Christmas. That was in second, but only about half as much, $17.9 million. Also Hitman in fourth and August Rush in seventh. And The Mist in ninth. I remembered The Mist doing good. Apparently it didn't.
I don't remember those other. I think I know This All Christmas. I think I know what that one is. But the other ones, I don't recall.
It sounds like you made them up.
Hitman is based on a video game with Jason Statham.
Oh, that one. And that's movie. Fucked up. Because that's Timothy Oliphant in that one. And I love that game.
Oh.
And I loved ish that movie. But yeah, that was. Go out of my brain.
August Rush is like, it's some kind of heartwarming thing that's in that really weird family pocket where it's like carefully made enough to be an all ages thing, but probably was rated G, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, the movie poster was probably like a yellow tint.
Sepia tone spaces.
Yes. Yes. Like profiles, yep. Like a real close up profile with like a farm in the distance in the background.
Hold on, I gotta pull up the August Rush poster.
Thank you.
It's blue, not sepia, and there's a boy, he's got a guitar.
Okay.
Wait, there's another one that is gold and has like a cloud of music notes.
What the hell was this movie?
Looks like Robin Williams was involved. Oh, that's the little kid
Freddie Highmore with a guitar.
That's Norman Bates.
That's Norman Bates?
Yes.
He's on that TV show where he plays a doctor on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's the show where Doogie Howser is on the spectrum. And my friend Abby was like, he's an adult. And I was like, that can't be right. Because he was a child actor when I was an adult.
Right, right.
He can't be an adult.
He's always going to be a child.
Chloe Grace Moretz is an adult.
I know.
That would be like, that child, a Kick-Ass just happened.
Right.
In my brain.
Exactly. It's like, how?
It was what? Anyway. And what's, Abigail Breslin. Abigail Breslin is like well into her adult phase.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw her on a documentary about something, I forget, and she's like grown as fuck, like talking and living. I'm like, what does she have to say? I'm like, oh, what does she have to say about this stuff? She's just like, you know, giving her insights on things. I'm like, oh, she's grown. Oh, she's a grown woman.
And who allowed this?
Right.
In Stillwater, this is what blew my mind, because in Stillwater, she's not only an adult, she's like, she's like starting to look a little haggard. Mm. And that's the character too. The character's in prison, but it's not a stretch. Like she's mid 20s and can easily be made to like, ooh, some hard living there.
Wow.
It's like, you're still a child though. Enchanted facts. it was Thanksgiving weekend that year. So Enchanted made $49 million over the 5-day, you know, Wednesday to Sunday, both in terms of a 3-day Thanksgiving and a 5-day Thanksgiving. That is the 9th biggest Thanksgiving weekend opening. Frozen is number one. Enchanted did win a second weekend, $16.4 million. The second place finisher was Beowulf. Remember the creepy Polar Express style? That was one of the early 3D, hey, 3D is back. We should have.
Yeah, I never watched it. I always meant to. And like just the other day, actually, I went ahead and took it out of my Netflix queue. I was like, I'm never going to watch this.
It will look so bad that it won't be watchable anymore. Right. But at the time, I liked it.
Because wasn't that also around the time of there was like an actors or writer's strike or something. There was something going on. And it was kind of like, I felt like this was the studio's way of saying, hey, we don't actually need actors.
We need computers and 1,000-year-old stories.
Right.
It fell to second place in its third weekend. The Golden Compass dethroned Enchanted. Overall, $127.8 million. 6 weeks in the top 10. 20th overall for 2007. A lot of expensive baubles to talk about.
Expensive baubles.
Enchanted had 3 Oscar nominations, Robin.
So it got multiple song nominations. Did it get 3 song nominations? And then
Correct.
They changed the rules?
All 3 are nominations for original song, Happy Working Song, So Close, and That's How You Know. All lost to, Robin. Oh, wow.
2001's Falling Slowly?
Yes. Falling Slowly from Once.
That was, remember, they only let the man talk, and then later they were like, okay, we're going to bring the female songwriter back up?
Awkward. The young days of annual Oscar controversies. This is one of only 4 movies that had 3 original songs all nominated, along with Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, and Dreamgirls. And Dreamgirls and Enchanted were in back-to-back years, and in both cases, all 3 of those songs lost. And at some point there, the Academy went, this is dumb, and changed the rules. So now you can have no more than 2 songs nominated because of Enchanted's failure.
I had no idea that Dreamgirls had that many original songs in it. Because I never saw the musical. I saw the movie for the first time this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I liked it a lot.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Even though I'm like, I can't believe they built a whole movie around the premise that Beyoncé can't sing. That is absurd.
Okay, the whole movie, I'm sorry. I only saw it once when it came out, and man, was that an annoying theater full of teenagers and old ladies all talking nonstop. So that probably affected it.
That sounds like the perfect circumstances to see Dreamgirls.
That entire movie is just... And I'm Telling You I Ain't Leaving is a good song. That is
going.
This is a good song. Going. Sorry. This is a good song stretched to an entire movie. And the only reason Jennifer Hudson won a dang Oscar is because that's a good song.
You know, before I saw the movie, I thought that that was the story. And I was like, listen, I am totally okay with one scene wonders winning Oscars, but she's the main character.
Right.
I just think it's really good. I think Eddie Murphy is incredible.
I'm
a Dreamgirls stan.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I've only seen it the one time, but that song, whoo, and the original of that song, Jennifer Holliday, whoo, just the same. Like, yeah,
also,
you can't fuck with
watch it. Watch the Chris Rock version of Heaven Can Wait, which has some other different title, to see John Cho singing that song very well.
I'm not waking up tomorrow morning and finding that there's nobody there.
Jake Gyllenhaal did it in an SNL monologue, and he did it very well.
You know what? Y'all, that's right there. Like, I'm all right, thirst traps.
Gonna, I was just going to feel just for white boys to just explode it.
Jake Gyllenhaal and John Cho singing I Ain't Going. Stop
yeah,
it.
John Cho's
stop
no,
it
right. Sorry. No.
Still more expensive baubles. Enchanted did win the Critics' Choice Award for Best Family Film. We stopped doing that one. There was a Best Family Film from 97 to 2007. So this is probably the last to win that award.
Because yeah, there stopped being family-friendly films being released on a regular basis.
Nominated for Best Actress, Best Composer. We got fancy and called it Best Composer and then eventually gave up. And Best Song. At the Globes, Amy Adams was nominated for Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical, lost to Robin.
2007. Oh, I don't know.
In a twisting of the comedy and musical rules, lost to Marion Cotillard for La Vie en Rose.
Oh, fair enough.
The eventual Oscar winner.
Can we do the obligatory this should be Amy Adams Oscar conversation, or should I wait till after the facts?
Hold it for now. Nominated for Best Song at the Globes, lost to Eddie Vedder's Mumble Thing from Into the Wild. Ugh. And couldn't even win MTV Awards. Three MTV Movie Award nominations. Amy Adams lost Best Female, pause to consider that, to Elliot Page for Juno. Do we need to go back and rename that award? I don't know. Best Comedic Performance, lost to Johnny Depp in one of them Pirates movies. And Best Kiss, lost to two people in Step Up to the Streets.
Fair enough.
Yep, that makes sense. That checks.
Yeah. That movie's sexy as hell.
Right?
bet you didn't know you were preparing for next year, but the sequel, Disenchanted, is due sometime in 2022. It is a Disney Plus exclusive, which is weird because this movie isn't on Disney Plus.
which come on.
I was very upset. And then I was trying to figure out, like, is there a reason?
Did you find out if there was a reason?
No, I do not know.
I mean, I think that Disenchanted has been planned for a while. So they probably said, hey, 3 months out from Disenchanted, let's make a big deal of dropping Enchanted on Disney Plus and prime the pump.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess.
This movie is almost irritatingly full of Disney references. There are hundreds upon hundreds of Disney in jokes, which occasionally is cute and more of the time is just like...
Let's name a better film. Like that whole thing. Let's talk about a funnier thing kind of thing.
Here are the two that I liked. One of the elderly male dancers in the park when they're doing That's How You Know. Mm. One of the elderly man that starts dancing is returning from Mary Poppins, one of the chimney sweeps from Mary Poppins.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That is really sweet.
And when Giselle is looking at the fish tank in the office, Part of Your World is playing faintly in the background, and the secretary is the voice of Ariel.
Oh, cool.
Huh.
And she's one of three. The first lady in the apartments when what's-his-name is knocking on the apartment store is the singing voice of Pocahontas. And the woman in the little soap opera scene is the voice of Belle.
So this is like deep. These are deep cuts. Like, there's no way like the casual Disney viewer would know about any of this. I was just wondering, like, I thought that maybe when she drank the fish, that was a Disney callback to something. Is that because it just doesn't seem like she would have done that? Like, I didn't understand the purpose of it, of her putting a fish in her mouth, but
good physical comedy, in my opinion.
Or crucifying a chipmunk. That chipmunk is straight up crucified.
Yeah. Like, this got dark, guys. What are we doing here?
So here's Robin Hitchcock to argue that 6-time Oscar nominee Amy Adams should be 6 nominations and 1 win for Enchanted.
Okay, pause. If part of my argument is that if she won for Enchanted, they wouldn't have done a lot of those nominations that they did in the 2010s, because everybody's like, oh, well, we got to eventually get Amy Adams her Oscar. Never gonna happen. So that's the biggest part of it. Secondly, this is her best performance, and it's like a +1 to her performance in Junebug, her first nomination, which a lot of people think she should have won for. So it's like, this is the best version of Amy Adams. I vastly prefer this to the Fighter Vice kind of I'm a serious actress Amy Adams Arrival, which I don't like very much. I know that's a bad opinion of mine. So that's dimension one, it being a genuinely good performance and being better than her other performances. Dimension two is that 2007 is one of the worst Best Actress slates ever, and they're usually very good, in my opinion. I think they have a much higher batting average in that category than they do in the others. So we've got Marion Cotillard one. That's actually the last, I haven't seen that movie. That's the most recent Oscar-winning performance I haven't seen. And then Kate Blanchett for Elizabeth the Golden Age, the sequel to Elizabeth, which is terrible, and she is not good in it. Julie Christie for Away From Her, amazing, but Julie Christie did not need a second Oscar. I can't even remember. Oh, Laura Linney and the Savages, completely not memorable. And then Elliot Page, I know we didn't know at the time, but not an actress.
Yes, Amy Adams has some unnecessary nominations. Certainly Vice, which, like, boy does that movie not even exist anymore. But how much did she do in it? The Masters, she's barely in.
She's the least of the nominated performances in Doubt.
That said, you're missing the winner that was really good in this argument. I have seen that movie.
Okay.
And it's great. And Marion Cotillard's fantastic and sings and acts. Like, it's if one of the, like, I don't know, if something more meaty than Enchanted Amy Adams was doing against LeVeon Rose, we could have a conversation, I guess. But I just don't think, I think Marion Cotillard is too good. I would have given it to her for Junebug, because Junebug is fantastic. In my memory, I only watched it the once. But one, I remember it being great. And two, I remember her, you know, being great in it. And those nominees are even worse. Like, Rachel Weisz and The Constant Gardener, like, won. And fine, she was probably good in it. But the others are Catherine Keener in Capote, Frances McDormand in North Country. North Country, for God's sakes.
I like North Country. I know I'm biased.
I don't hate North Country, but it's the CBS movie of the week. It's not like an Oscar movie. And Michelle Williams
like
and Brokeback
really
Mountain.
I feel like that's really dismissive of things that women care about, John.
I don't know. I liked it a lot at the time. I think Charlize in that was one of the best performances of that year, because it's Charlize and it was really, really good. But it was like a, let's sit down to write a dramatic follow-up to Monster about a sad, serious thing where everyone can have sad, serious acting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I didn't
don't
see
listen
it.
To me. Go listen go listen to the Theronathon episode for a
right,
thorough
just,
take on North Country.
To continue calling you out, Sean, you
yes.
said that Enchanted is not meaty enough to be worthy of an Oscar. And then when you describe an intensely meaty female role, you call it movie of the week.
Ooh.
Hey, these may well be two blind spots.
Yeah.
I also dismiss Dreamgirls as the one person in this panel who Dreamgirls is demographically the least for. You know? So we all have these predilections. When I say Enchanted isn't meaty enough, I mean it's kind of a thin ripoff of Elf. Like it's good and fun, but yeah, Enchanted is the kind of movie where I'm like, don't consider this for awards, because there's not much to it.
I would have had zero problem with Will Ferrell being nominated for Elf.
No, I like comedies getting attention, but this isn't that good. This isn't that good. She's great in it, but it's not a good movie.
That's the thing. I agree this movie is not very good. I think Amy Adams is so great in it. And I also think that good performances in bad movies should be eligible for Academy Awards.
I feel like we haven't given enough attention to James Marsden's role in this film.
Who else
are you going to cast as a Prince Charming Disney character come to life other than James Marsden? Like he's never an actor that I'm just like, oh, cool, he's here. But he's not. I'm not.
I have no strong feelings about him.
Right. Mm-hmm. But like the scene where he gets, or he starts to sing his song and then he gets taken out by the cyclists. Dude, more of that. More of that.
Agreed.
The recurring bit when they come out of the sewer and the increasingly exasperated city workers are just like, fine, what? Who are you? That's when Camila has taught me to do this. I spent all of those scenes scanning the background for a movie poster to determine when they were filming. And that's when I finally caught it. There was a Superman Returns poster.
I literally, part of my why is it this on Disney Plus was I was like, was this a co-production with Warner Brothers? Because that poster is there.
Huh.
I guess this predates the whole let's replace the posters technology.
Right. I did notice that Wicked was on Broadway at that time. Mm-hmm. And didn't Idina Menzel? Isn't she in Wicked or wasn't she in Wicked?
Yes.
She was the star of Wicked. By the way, she didn't sing.
No.
Right? Why would we pay for her and not have her sing?
I wonder if they were like, well, we can't overshadow Amy Adams. And then they were like, that was a mistake, and fixed it in process.
Somewhere I saw that, you know, they hired her, you know, that she was very flattered to be hired just for her acting. She assumed she was going to sing. And then when she got the script and saw that she didn't, she was very touched. And that's nice for you, but...
But the rest of us...
You're the best singer on this set by a mile, and we have some time to fill. Right? Like, have a little something. Have a little ditty.
Have something prepared.
She should have, like, another suitcase in another hall type song.
Yeah, yeah. I felt bad for her. She did nothing wrong.
Right.
She was not... She has to do the, like, oh, stepmother bit. And then when it comes down to it, she's just like, eh, fine, go. Like, there's not even a conflict. That's sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. I never saw the movie Kate and Leopold, partially because I know how it ends. I think it's very sad when women leave their whole lives behind for love.
Yeah. It's also, I just hate these stories like this. That you're right. They did lean way into the Disney fairy tale, live happily ever after business with the whole, okay, so now this single dad who is like super protective of his child is fallen in love with this on the outside, seemingly psychotic, delusional
right.
stranger. And it's like, it's fine if you realize you're not in love with Idina. Cool. You break up with her, whatever. But then we just move on to this woman you know nothing about, really, and, like, just go on the fact of, yeah, she's telling us this story and it's a true thing. Like, she has no last name. She has no social security number. She doesn't have, like, I doubt she has any sort of, like, employable skills. Like, what is happening? What are you going to do?
She creates a fashion studio, right?
Oh, I fell asleep at some point, probably.
Yeah, I think at the end, it's like she knows how to make dresses out of curtains.
Okay, so
she
there's
has
that.
A fashion studio.
Okay. I guess
pigeons help her.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, I guess she has very little overhead. She doesn't have to pay employees. She just she gets the pigeons and street rats to come and sew these outfits, the mock-ups and whatnot. So I guess, my hope for Disenchanted is a follow-up onto where they are in their lives. Because that's what I was, when it was over, I was like, I'd like to know how they're doing now. Not because I am deeply invested in their love story, but because this shit doesn't add up.
That title suggests to me that maybe it won't.
I would like to think so. I would like, let's keep it real, guys. Let's not give me this sugar-coated, like, mumbly-dumbly bullshit. Like, let's bring it into the real world for realsies. He is a divorce attorney, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
So I want to see how shit gets ugly and how, like, real-world Giselle turns, like, how, like, yeah. she's a full New Yorker now, and then Giselle's got attitude, she's got property, she's got fucking her own bank account, she's got a social, so and maybe she's popped out a couple kids for him and she is here to get paid. So I would like to see the full transformation of what Giselle turns into.
I hope you're right. I do like when she convinces that couple that they're in love, though.
Yes. Oh, when then she touches her hair. She goes in full rage. She's like, she
also, every
white
woman who speaks in this movie is yelling.
Right.
That's the biggest ooh with a close runner-up to multiple gay jokes. Just straight look at this silly gay man.
Yeah.
I know that Disney is being very slow to evolve. Jungle Cruise, they took another one toe forward with Jungle Cruise. Emily Blunt's brother is gay and briefly talks about it. That's, I believe, the first time a Disney character has, like, had a thing to say about the fact that they're gay. Just once, and never has a relationship, but he acknowledges.
We're moving along like at really creepy crawly speeds here, Disney. We're just
right.
like centimeters. Like, what's happening?
What did they call with LeFou dancing with a man in the live action Beauty with Beast? Like a distinctly gay moment? What did they call it? It was some kind of ridiculous phrase.
Unambiguously gay?
I'm looking was this it, up.
Because this was to draw a distinction from the fact that the guy who owns the little general store in Frozen is gay, because if you looked carefully, you saw a picture of his family and it was two men. And so then they were like, well, look, now LeFou is going to dance with a man for 3 seconds. Here's Cruella. Here's a guy that just acts real gay and never mentions it. Here's Jungle Book. Now the foppish cliche says he's... When are we going to get... Anyway.
Exclusively gay moment.
Exclusively gay. You know. There's certain clubs that are exclusively gay. And if you walk in... All of which is to say, I know they're tiptoeing. I would not have guessed that 14 years ago they were straight up doing leather daddy jokes in Disney movies. Holy crap.
What?
I also don't remember the leather daddy joke, but I'll take your word for it, John.
when he's knocking on all the doors, one of the doors a guy opens and he's got a vest and a short beard.
Yeah.
And he kind of smiles at James Marsden like, hey. And it's James Marsden goes and walks away. Like, what? Is it 1982? What are you doing?
Well, maybe it wasn't necessarily the gay portion that made him go, ooh, it was just he's not into whips and chains. He enjoys a nice, a loving soft touch.
A nice knuckle. It occurred to me when you're talking about the rats, here's double feature that wouldn't sell any tickets. The theme is rats employed to do things. We're going to show The Suicide Squad and Enchanted.
I did watch these movies back to back, and I had that thought.
That's funny.
What else? Watching this was when I realized that this is the slightly more insidious cousin of the Three's Company plot. The Three's Company plot being my least favorite thing in a movie, like an entire comedy premise built on just two people haven't told each other what's going on, and that would solve the whole thing. The cousin to that that's employed here is a supernatural thing is happening and no one will acknowledge it. Just clearly something bizarre and otherworldly has taken place, and everyone spends two acts of the movie going, but why is she being weird? Come on. She's talking to birds. Like just accept. And even worse, when like there isn't like a big break where they realize, oh my God, she's really a princess. They just kind of slowly accept this.
Yeah. I found that to be weird also. And I guess it wasn't a thing until Susan Sarandon shows up and, like, you know, in all of her evil glory and whatnot.
And turns into a dragon.
Full-ass dragon right in the middle of the stupid King and Queen ball or whatever. That ball made me mad. It looks so dumb. Like, I found myself like, what a waste of money and time and energy.
There are a lot of scenes in this movie where it's like, oh, and then clearly they wanted to have a big musical number.
Right.
Like, that's how you know song is great. That number is great. But there are several other scenes where it's like, okay, we get it. This is a musical.
And she is the only one, oddly enough, that is not in costume. Like, coming into, like this is your time to shine.
Like, she can be beautiful in the present, too. But, like, that dress is doing her no favors.
No.
And also, I am such a sucker for the we're slow dancing and we're finally realizing our feelings for each other trope. And it just doesn't work here. I don't think they have enough chemistry.
I think I blame Patrick Dempsey.
Me too. What were we doing with Patrick Dempsey in the late aughts? Like, I know it's Grey's Anatomy's fault, but like we all went through something where it was like, yeah, this guy's interesting.
And I don't understand. He's not. Yeah. He's really
the
not.
Opposite of interesting.
He's like lightweight. Hey, you know what? We had two Patrick Dempsey movies. It's like... We had he was in With Honors. So now we've had two Patrick Dempsey movies like almost right after each other. But yeah,
prefer young goofy Patrick Dempsey to alleged sex symbol Patrick Dempsey.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess he tried really hard to like make that, and for some reason, for however many seasons he was on that show, everybody was like, "Yes, we'll call him McDreamy." And it's like he's not though. He's not.
Definitely not.
But It speaks to this that it took us this long to realize we almost had back to back. Were it not for Addie's interruption, that was With Honors is only two episodes ago, and we're like, oh yeah, him. We had already forgotten.
Right. So, case in point, vis-a-vis Patrick Dempsey. Why is Patrick Dempsey?
Any other takes, deconstructions, or anything else? Is it a PG just because it has Susan Sarandon's ample cleavage? Is that the way that Disney was towing the line?
I think fear, you know, fear. Like, I think this was around the time they stopped giving movies G ratings, right? I have a thing which is ridiculous.
Please.
Giselle from Andalasia sounds to me like Shen Andalusian.
What?
Like it, Debaser, the Pixies song. Based off the old Buñuel movie, Shen Andalou. And I genuinely believe in my heart that that's why Andalasia is the name of her kingdom.
It might be. I would like to think that is the case.
An art film noted for slicing a lady's eyeball open is one of the many
I think
references
it's more
in this
about
Disney
the
movie.
Pixie song. I really do.
My confusion was, you know, they're usually really good at coming up with a fictional place name that sounds right, like Arendelle in Frozen sounds yeah. perfect. And this is Andalusia is a place. They just changed one letter. That's like saying, oh, she's from France. Like, what?
She's from France.
France.
Yeah.
She's from Paris. Paris, France.
It's a place.
Let's rate it. I'm being very negative. Apparently, in a gendered way, I apologize. You assume I was criticizing movies of the week. I like movies of the
All
week.
Right.
I miss them.
Yeah, wasn't that good?
Yeah.
Especially the run on Fox in the mid-90s where they were just like, we came up with something terrible happening. This week it's bees.
Right.
Next week, I don't know, a volcano maybe? That was fun.
Yes. What a time but to be alive.
I didn't hate this movie. I kind of like this movie. I think it has significant problems. And I really didn't like the gay jokes and some of the other stereotyping. And, you know, it's a little, like, cringy 14 years later. But it's fun and the music's great. And Amy Adams is fantastic. 62. I'll go to 62. Robin?
Do you have the spreadsheet pulled up?
I don't.
Okay. I'm like, I want to make sure I give this a better score than Princess and the Frog.
Oh, that's a good point.
I think I'm successfully doing that. The number I wrote down is 67.
It's 67, and it's in my notebook. You gave Princess and the Frog a 63.
I did it. Yay.
All right. I'm going to say 73.
Is the reading? Oh, I thought
73. It kind of has, like, I still enjoyed it, but there's definitely a hard stop for me where I think, like, right up until we get to the ball is when it stops being interesting to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. The third act is by far the weakest. Yeah.
That lands on a 67 and one-third, a perfectly acceptable score for a mostly acceptable movie, right around that Footloose level, as I look back. It's a little better than Footloose. That sounds right. This is a little better than Footloose. To the bingo card, I'm sorry. Usually I have a written down tracked bingo card. This time I just don't. So
did she fall in high heels?
She had to have. Like when
but
she got
I don't
there.
Remember it happening.
Like when she got to New York, like I feel like she got pushed around. There was something with her.
She loses her shoes. She takes her shoes off when she chases after the dragon.
Nah, but when she gets to New York, like I know I've seen. Yeah, because like she fell through the doorway at least when she got
oh,
to their
you're
apartment.
Right. Yes. So I don't know if it counts as her. She's not falling because of her high heels. But
no,
she falls.
Falls in
right?
them. Not because of them. That's not the thing. So, yes.
Well, I have a bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Woohoo!
Yay! Is this your first of 2021?
No, it's my second.
Oh, damn. You know what that means. That means that Robin gets to pick a movie.
All right! Woo!
Is this only our second selection? Was Camila
correct.
Picking seven the first one?
I think so.
Yes.
Robin, are you prepared to do this or should that be the next thing? Should we draw one and then you'll select or are you ready to go?
I want to review the list. Let's draw one.
Yeah,
okay.
I know. I'm sure
right.
there will be charts involved.
Yes.
Robin needs some time with this.
Whenever we've done movie drafts, I've like challenged myself to pick four new movies. Mm-hmm. So now I need to decide if all of the movies I've put up in a movie draft count for that.
Okay.
But I'll think about it.
If I ever get that, it is going to be the most indulgent choice. I am going to pick something that only I could possibly be interested in. The Natural. I'm going to pick The Natural because this keeps coming up. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's start with Robin this week.
Okay, so the first thing I want to quickly acknowledge is that I had this adorable experience. I got to see my nieces and nephews most of my nieces and nephews over the weekend. And my niece Gia, who's 10 years old, was like, I want to show this movie to you. And it was Midnight Madness from 1980 or 1981. And it's the reason that she watched it is because she loves the movie Back to the Future and has like a crush on Michael J. Fox. Aww. And he is briefly in this very, very young. And so like she was like watching all the Michael J. Fox movies she could get her hand on.
Nice.
Anyway, it's a goofy like mystery hunt kind of like college broad comedy. And we were watching it and I was like, this is charming enough, but I can't understand why a child in 2021 would be into this old movie that's like not very good. And then at one point they have a very direct It's a Mad, 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 Mad World reference. Mm. And I remembered that I loved It's a Mad, 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 Mad World when I was a kid. And I was like, oh, there's something about this plot that is exciting for children. Yeah, anyway, it was a nice moment of connecting aunt to niece.
Aw, cute.
Yeah.
That is nice.
Yeah. And then I watched The Suicide Squad.
Have we all watched The Suicide Squad?
No, and I'm not sure if I'm going to.
I don't know if you should.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't enjoy the first one. I was pretty mad at. And but I did really like the Harley Quinn movie, and I also would love to watch Idris Elba do some stuff on screen, but I mean, I don't know if
Idris
that's
Elba
enough.
Likes to work. Sean, what are our blind spots?
Robin, this is your You Can't Handle the Truth. You set the tone for the Suicide Squad discussion.
Okay, so to repeat a tweet that I put out, it was like, how is this a sequel, a reboot, and a messy first draft all at once? Mm. And I think that this is also a really great example of something that my friend Liz Labaz always talks about, where when you have a unified creative vision, or whatever the hell they called it in the trailer, when you have white male directors who have been told that their shit doesn't stink, mm-hmm. and then they forget that not all of their ideas are perfect, they make 2.5 hour movies that should be roughly 100 minutes long and leave in a bunch of scenes that have no business being in the final cut. And that's how I feel about this movie.
Wow. 2.5 hours.
Parts of it.
Like, we're still doing this. 2.5 hours, huh?
Right. I think I looked it up. I think it's less than 2.5 hours, but it feels like it's 2.5 hours.
It's a tight 132. That's only 212.
Okay.
I really liked it, but wouldn't, I don't know. Camille, I think you would like it. I think most people who are comfortable, other than people who just can't take a lot of gore, I think most people would at least like it. But I'm not going to be like, how could you not? Because it's a weird, it is a weird flavor. This is a very specific kind of cocktail that is either going to be to your palate or it isn't. The reason I like it a lot is because you shouldn't be able to do like a gore forward splatter fest, a comedy, and an action movie with a very warm heart all at the same time and have those elements hang together. And I think they do.
Hmm.
I think that the moments that are like, oh my God, look at this insane river of blood he set up trauma style at work. I think most of the gags work. And I love the relationship between Ratcatcher and Idris Elba's generic good main character. Like, I love...
Definitely not Will Smith's whatever he was.
Right. Even though I think they have the same superpower.
Yeah, pretty much. I do love the gag when Viola Davis is like, you're all very different and I've chosen you for different reasons, and then doesn't even bother to change the descriptions when she's saying why Idris Elba is good and why John Cena is good. Yeah, it just works. It is. I liked it. It is weird that Harley has been in three movies and is fundamentally a different character in all three of them, despite being clearly the same connected character. You know, the force of those being three very different directors, I guess. But, you know, she's great, and I'll hang out with her anytime, no matter what she's doing, and I like it.
It unironically has the "we kidnapped you and gave you a pretty dress to wear" trope. Frankly, Scarlett wrote a sketch about that like 10 years ago.
That all didn't work for me as much, that chunk. But I don't know. I had a good time. I had a good time.
Is Jared Leto in this one?
No, he is not. Okay. Nowhere to be seen nor heard of. Okay. Thank goodness.
That's a plus.
To answer your question about how is it a reboot and a sequel, because it's just a sequel. Like, they kept trying to be like, this isn't really the same as the last one, because they're distancing themselves from the last one. But, like, Harley, Boomerang, Jai Courtney, and Viola Davis show up and reference their history together from the past movie. It's just a sequel. There's no reboot about it.
That's fair.
But yeah, let me clarify, Robin. Do you not recommend it? Are you like, no, don't watch this?
No, I think for Camila, I genuinely don't know. For the average listener, you probably know if this is up your alley or not.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, it's free on HBO Max. I would not have watched this movie in the theater. I don't even think I would have rented it. So, you know, this whole streaming service thing, maybe it's good.
So your recommendation is Midnight Madness.
I don't even know. My recommendation is have a young person in your life show you something that they love.
I'll make a note of that in the description. Camila?
I thought I watched something new, but I don't recall because my letterbox was on the glitch. My letterbox app was on the glitch for some reason. It wouldn't let me record anything for like a couple weeks. So I don't know. So I have no recollection, but I do know that I decided to revisit The Game. It's on Netflix right now. It was one of those movies that had such a shocking twist that I was always like, I'll never be able to watch it again. It won't be the same. And I was right. It does not hold up on a set. Like, if you've seen it already, the second viewing does not hold up for you. And you just have, and I don't know, maybe also the years later have kind of affected my view of it. But I mean, it was still like fun time, but I just have so many more questions. I'm just like, this just doesn't make sense. This doesn't jive out. Like, I don't know. There's just too many variables that could not have made this happen properly. So
I completely agree.
So I would suggest that if you have seen The Game and you have fond memories of it, don't revisit it. Just leave those memories where they are. I tried to watch A Quiet Place Part 2 last night, but fell asleep. And I don't think I'm going to go back. Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't think I'm going to go back. I think I'm fine. It's like, Dan told me what happened and I was like, yeah, okay.
It's fine. It's one of those where it's just like, hey, remember that? Here's some more, you know? it's just like, let's keep this story going for a while in the same way without really heightening in any, you know, it's just a straight sequel. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just a straight sequel. Right. I'm glad you said that about The Game because there's a criterion and I had it in my hand at one point when I was buying all of them in the sale last month. Because I was like, this is probably still good, so... Yeah. Now I will not spend that money.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I told you what I think of Suicide Squad. I would certainly not, especially now when a lot of people are weighing what they'll go into public for. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it for Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds. That is, you know, it's not awful. I probably went like 5 out of 10, but you know, it doesn't do enough with. The premise is he's in a video game and he's an NPC, but he's becoming self-aware and it's a big thing. And it you know, it has some stuff that's funny and ultimately lands on we gotta, you know, do this stupid arbitrary task so that the bad guy will lose. There's good stuff in there, but he's just doing more Deadpool. And it has one of the worst romantic subplots I've ever seen. So
is it with the person from Killing Eve?
Yeah.
What's her name? There's a C in her name. Sorry.
I don't
Comer.
Know.
Comer.
That sounds right. Hang on.
Villanelle.
Jodie Comer.
Briefly, her digital. She is in the real world and she's smitten with Ryan Reynolds in The Game. But
a lot younger than him.
Right?
Well, no, she. minor Free Guy spoilers, don't pretend you care. She and a character played by Joe Keery from Stranger Things, Steve from Stranger Things, are the original programmers of the game. And it comes out that he's been in love with her the whole time, even though they were just friends. And of course, she immediately is like, oh, no, I love you too, because that's what happens. Right. A nerd is like, but I like you. I just didn't say anything for 5 years of our lives. And the lady goes, oh, because she was just fucking waiting.
So it's with an age-appropriate partner, but it's still
It is with
pointless.
An age-appropriate partner.
Okay, good. Ryan Reynolds is 17 years older than her.
Is it just Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds? Yeah. This movie?
Is it the Lego movie?
It is very the Lego movie. I mean, yeah. There's a ton of the Lego movie in it. Like, yes, Ready Player One and Wreck-It Ralph are in there, but not as much as the Lego movie, and They Live. There's a whole chunk of this about sunglasses that let you see the truth and him trying to get his friend to wear the sunglasses. It's like, the conflict of the movie is that the real world bad guy, played by Taika Waititi, actually he's really good, that's one of the best parts of the movie. The real world bad guy has stolen their code to make his more commercial game. Meanwhile, this has a lot of code from other movies. It's
also Taika Waititi wasted in the Suicide Squad.
But it was nice, his daughter, and he taught her to
that
be
that scene should have been cut.
The movies I loved this week are not new. It's Mandy with Nicolas Cage. Finally watched Mandy, which is a, you know, head-melting river of gore and terror. But
yeah,
if you're into that, it's great. And Smooth Talk. Oh, my God. Smooth Talk, the Laura Dern's first leading role from 1985 by Joyce Chopra. It's one of the best, like, teen coming-of-age movies I've ever seen. I couldn't believe that I had almost no awareness of it until Criterion released it, except that it's not, you know, a dumb hormonal masturbatory fantasy. So it's left out, you know, we watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High and don't talk about Smooth Talk. It's fantastic. And Robin, you're familiar with the source material.
Yeah. Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? Is one of my favorite pieces of literature. I famously don't read, but I love that short story. And I also like had a really good like English class experience in high school where like my teacher actually really successfully broke down its influences, which are an actual news story, the ballad poem, The Demon Lover, and the Bob Dylan song, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, which what an amazing way to get creative inspiration. And I can't believe I think part of the reason I've never seen this movie is that the source material is so important to me that I worry that it can't possibly live up to those expectations. But hearing from Sean that it does, it's on my watch list again.
Loved it. Loved it. I had a good run because I also watched Moonstruck for the first time.
Oh, I love that movie.
Moonstruck is great. It was a Nicolas Cage week. And man, is Moonstruck and Mandy a whiplash of a Nick Cage double. Should we draw a movie?
Yes, let's do it.
Please.
The number is 1033. I was looking the other day at the fact that there's like a whole 30 on this list that's just a wall of Star Trek and Star Wars, and we just missed it.
Oh, thank God.
That starts at 1075, but no, we are at 1033, which is, it's Shrek the Third.
Damn it! Fucking hell. Like,
well, I guess this is a nice transition.
God! Ugh!
I'm weighing my veto.
Oh, I didn't know you had.
Oh, I didn't know you had one either.
I have the only standing veto. Do I use it for Shrek the Third? You know, I'm sure there are some laughs in there, but
I doubt it.
Let me see. Is it streaming somewhere? It's not.
No, you know what? You know what? The hell with it. Because here's why. One, I don't want to watch the movie, and that's what vetoes are for. But two, if what I just said is correct, Robin's picking a movie. There could be another person selecting a movie. Our Halloween run is coming up.
Right.
When, if not, and then it's almost the end of the year. I say this now. Watch, the next thing we actually draw will be Transformers 2. But I'm playing the veto.
Exercising my veto, man.
Let it get better.
I like that I get to edit in both of my usual clips. Or maybe all three. I could do expensive baubles, too.
Okay. It's a step in the right direction. It is It is a half step in the right direction. And I say half step because we're going from one big green thing to another. It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but the one from 1990.
Yay! That's awesome!
Thanks, Sean, for your service, I guess.
Would you rather have had Shrek 3?
No, I don't even know.
No, I rewatched this one within the last 6 to 8 months. And it holds up pretty well.
All right, it's on HBO Max. It's on HBO Max. Even better. So, all right, I'm okay with this.
It's better than Shrek 3. And I know we kind of half did a Turtles episode, but that's when we were so unenthused that we threw another one in just for the hell of it. Remember? That's when we did Aliens as well.
Oh, that, the animated
I didn't realize that was that episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll see how this one goes.
We don't have to give our Turtles history because we did that the last time.
Right.
Just remember that the concert tour is the thing so we don't forget and talk about it again.
I will never forget.
No.
I mean, I did forget before the last episode, but now it's back in my brain forever.
Well, speaking of music, before we revisit the sewers of New York, Enchanted was released. Oh, that's the tie. This is two Sewers of New York movies back to back. Enchanted was released November 21st, 2007. What was the number one song in America?
Rihanna?
No, I'll bet that she's appeared on a track with both of these artists, though.
Both of these artists. 50 Cent?
It's somebody, somebody featuring somebody.
Justin Timberlake?
No. In fact, I'm leaving out something in my mind. It's actually very terrible of me to say that she's appeared on a track with both of these artists, because one of them, she had a much worse...
Ooh, Chris Brown?
It's Chris Brown.
And...
Yeah.
I don't know. R. Kelly? What did he do with people?
Run it!
No, I don't remember this one. Yes, there you go.
Okay.
Featuring T-Pain. T-Pain is the featuring.
I never really saw it for Chris Brown, like even before his domestic violence.
Agreed.
Yeah, what was the, like, he has a sweet voice and can sing a little bit, like, okay.
I think they were
really handsome, like it, his not face even, is fine.
Yeah, like if he doesn't open his mouth, but right. I mean, like, but, like both literally and like to audibly and physically, like I don't want to, like nothing about that is okay. He just seems like he looks dirty. Like he always looks dirty. Like I don't understand. Like this motherfucker hadn't showered in like weeks. Like it's just ew. Like I don't know why anybody ever. I think they tried to like compare him to Michael Jackson when he first came out. He was
come on.
He was a young buck, and any black male with a high pitched voice who can dance, who can do the moonwalk, everybody wanted to be like, oh, he's Michael Jackson. He's like, just like let it go.
We just all of us want a non problematic Michael Jackson to latch on to.
And this wasn't it. Like Chris wasn't it. It turns out. Yeah,
I think he was Bruno nasty. Mars, he was not like, black.
I don't know exactly what Bruno Mars's lineage is.
Non-whiteness appearance comes from having some Native Hawaiian ancestry. Or I was wrong. Bruno Mars has a Filipino mother, and his dad has some Puerto Rican and Jewish ancestry. That gotcha. Gives him racial ambiguity.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay. But like Bruno, he's a special little something. Like he's
very talented.
Yeah, super talented, but he has that full energy of like a 65-year-old black man. Like I feel like my grandfather was like like when I was born, like running the streets. Like Bruno is special and I like him.
Yeah.
Are you telling me he's no black though?
He's no black.
He is no black.
He's going a long way on that ambiguity.
Yeah, he should do a song with Ariana Grande.